Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with poet Jonathan Penton about his new book, A Limited Number of Miracles, A Walk Through the New Orleans Sculpture Garden. Jonathan Penton is the founder of the online journal Unlikely Stories, as well as Unlikely Books. He is the technical director of the New Orleans Poetry Festival and has several books to his credit. Today we're talking about his new one, A Limited Number of Miracles, A Walk Through the New Orleans Sculpture Garden. Jonathan Penton, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much.
So, what a splendid idea this was.
Oh, thank you.
And you got it from attending a reading from a book by Andy Young that was about another museum.
Well, it's not about a museum, really. Hers isn't right. About a museum. Museum of the Recently Departed was the title of her book. And I heard that and thought, oh, so this is about a museum. And I talked to her and she's like, well, not really. It covers this and that. And I'm like, oh, well, a book about a museum would be really cool. So I just decided to focus on my favorite museum, which is the New Orleans Sculpture Garden.
A lot of these are ekphrastic poems. So explain what that is for people who don't know.
Sure. The most rudimentary form is to say that it's a poem about a work of visual art. There's a lot of ways to interpret that, and people sometimes say, oh, it can be a poem about any existing work of art, like a poem about a song, you know, or a poem about music or any other form of art. The most famous example would be Ode to a Grecian Urn, where you take the piece of art, you find what inspires you in the art, and you go in your own direction with it. It's always an homage, but it can be very indirect. As I wrote this book, the earlier poems in the book tend to be more focused on the sculpture and more clearly about what I thought the sculptor was trying to say. As I progressed, I let the sculpture inspire me in a more slanted way. I allowed it to let me feel things, and then I'd write about those feelings, which might or might not necessarily resemble the sculpture itself. Sometimes it would, and then sometimes I'd make direct references to what I was seeing, but often I'd just do a reference to what I was feeling. This was the way I could use it to explore my own grief, you know. A lot of these sculptures, you know, the sculptor wasn't necessarily grieving when they worked on them, but I was, and I thought it was, you know, fine and valuable and good to take what I was feeling and work together with what the sculpture made me feel and create something entirely new.
Grief is the great profound subject now. It's not like I don't get books about grief every week. It's astounding how much emotion is being vented about grief these days. So have you found this healing for you? Not that you're ever completely healed from experiences like that.
It's been extremely helpful. It's been extremely cathartic, both the writing and the editing and the publishing of the volume. Yeah, I find it helpful. I don't want to use the word healing because I don't really know what that would mean right now.
Sure.
You know, it's only been a little more than 2 years, but certainly very helpful.
So talk about what the process was like for you. Did you set yourself a task? Did you say, today I'm going to visit this particular work of art? Did you stay with one work of art until you finished the poem? Did it require research?
I scheduled my time there like I would schedule my time for any other task. I'd say, okay, on this day, I can spend 3 hours there or 4 hours there. And I'd sit with a single sculpture as long as it took. Mm-hmm. And of course, then I'd take it home and edit it at some point after it had set for a few days and I was comfortable beginning the editing process. Some of them were researched. Some of them, I just had no idea what I was looking at, and I went ahead and checked the internet for it, and smartphones were wonderful for that. I didn't leave the garden. I just kept researching as I was there in the presence of the piece.
And you set deliberate limits for the project.
I did. You know, while I was working on the project, the sculpture garden expanded, which was wonderful and very exciting. The new section of the sculpture garden is, of course, in flux. They do some rotating sculptures. They're still expanding their inventory. And, of course, they have the interior place, which is not always open to the public because of COVID. So I thought that it would really be impractical to try to do that part of the garden.
Yeah.
And, you know, the original part of the garden is 66 sculptures. That's enough of a book.
It's manageable.
Really. Yeah. Plus the new area is still not fully shaded and is wicked hot when I was trying to work.
You decided not to give these poems titles beyond the title of the work.
That's right. I wanted to stay focused on the objects as ekphrastic object towards a sculptural object. I know that I just talked about how much I slanted my content, how much I diverged from the original sculpture, but I still wanted to ground it in, okay, this is a part of the garden. This is a part of the sculpture garden. This is a sculpture within a sculpture garden. That's part of why I kept it in the same order that I wrote them, you know, rather than say, oh, this will look better over here, or maybe we should start with the strongest. It doesn't start with the strongest. It starts in the order that I wrote them because I wanted to explore and I wanted to duplicate the route one can take walking through the sculpture garden and experience it that way.
Now, the image you've chosen for the cover is the monumental head of Jeanne d'Arc by Auguste Rodin. Now, why did you choose that one as a cover image? And I like the speaker's sense of invitation in this poem. So if you'd read it for us after you describe it, that would be great.
Absolutely. So the head is part of a much larger sculpture, The Burghers of Calais. I picked it. First off, it was, I love this sculpture. There's a lot in this book about aging, and this is a very middle-aged man, you know, very much the sculpture of a middle-aged man trying to live with dignity, trying to approach things with dignity. In the large sculpture, you know, he's approaching something fairly horrible with dignity. This is just his head, and he's got an appropriate expression for doing that. We wanted a sculpture that was in the public domain, too. So, you know, I mean, we couldn't pick from just any sculpture in the garden, but this one in particular, and I do love the poem that I wrote about it, and I felt that it really helped ground the book and helped explore the content a little more. We know that pride comes from both directions. We know of the character earned with time, contrasted with the haughtiness of youth. We know how it feels to be trapped in the middle, and I know you know we always did. Oh, sculptor, sculpt yourself as Ganymede or Onate. Place yourself in every work of art, from Mona Lisa to Mickey Sabbath. Now, poet, find yourself in the New Orleans Sculpture Garden, but bring each reader along. Tell them sculptures are worth more than bronze. Poems are worth more than paper. Aging can build character, or character can come through art. And we needn't suffer each tragedy of Rodin to learn each thing he knew.
Nice.
Thank you.
Oh, poet.
Yeah.
I always love that. Oh, poet. Oh, sculptor. The one, I don't know, I was looking at this so much, so often, and thinking, what's my favorite sculpture in that garden? And it's so hard. It's so hard. But the next poem I want you to read, Karma, is the work that I think speaks to me a lot some of the time. Could you describe it? It's hard to describe, but it's...
Karma is a stainless steel tower. It's a sculpture of a man, and on his back, he has a smaller man that's more or less identical, but sitting on his shoulders, as opposed to standing tall. And on his back, there's another smaller man sitting on his shoulders, and so forth and so on for, you know, epochs of time, curving up into the sky with smaller and smaller men sitting on the shoulder, weighing down the man who's standing tall.
And it's this bright silver stainless steel.
It is. It's a very bright sculpture.
It really catches you.
It does, yeah. It's situated by itself in a little pavilion, and it's very tall. You can see it from some distance away. And yeah, when you watch people in the garden, they're typically very excited by it.
And it's by Dohosa?
That's right. Okay. Karma. It's a lie, you know. Less than that, an absurdity. A ridiculousness oft-repeated in this more risible-than-average town. There is no karma. Bad things do not happen to bad people. Oh, the evil suffer. The evil are weighted with 1,000 asses bearing down upon their necks. They are blinded, eyes ripped from their faces, 1,000 times, 100,000 times, a single lifetime with a span beyond reckoning. They stand under this pressure, stand tall, with mighty feet and hands. That is what happens to the wicked. It is the same thing that happens to you.
I love that poem.
Thank you.
It really captures that feeling.
I wasn't sure if I was being too preachy, you know, by directly saying that I don't believe in karma literally.
Yeah. I come and go with it. Sometimes I believe in it, sometimes not.
Fair enough.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with poet Jonathan Penton, whose new book is A Limited Number of Miracles, A Walk Through the New Orleans Sculpture Garden. And there's one sculpture that I think a lot of us respond to here perhaps differently than someone from somewhere else, and that's Window with Ladder Too Late for Help by Leandro Ehrlich. And it's one many people know because of its connection to Hurricane Katrina for us.
Right. And, of course, it was very difficult to write about, you know.
Sure.
I wasn't here for Hurricane Katrina, so I wanted to be. I certainly didn't want to write a Hurricane Katrina poem. I have no right
yeah.
to do so. But there's a lot to see in the sculpture. There's a lot to unpack with it. And, you know, I did my best, and here's what we've got. Your greatest tragedy will drown like all your triumphs in a thicket of living detritus sculpted by Langoliers. This fire will become ash. The ash will become seedlings. And the seedlings will be raised when the Ironmen come along. Maybe you crave to be forgotten. Maybe you hope something of you will be forever known. Time does not concern itself with relevance or the weights and suspensions of humans or the gods.
Now describe that work of art.
The visual work, right? Sure. So the sculpture is a ladder. It's a simple stainless steel ladder going up at a tilt towards a window. And the window is there suspended in space with bricks around it. It looks really interesting because you can't immediately see how it's suspended. You know, they must
right.
have weights in the ladder that are holding the whole thing together. But you've got a ladder, and then you've got a window and bricks in air, just kind of hanging there in the middle of the garden. It's unnerving to see.
It is. It really is. It catches you and throws you off balance at the same time.
It absolutely does. It definitely throws you off balance. You know, and of course I understood what it was about Katrina literally, but I felt there was more to explore with that image that I could explore, that I had the right to explore.
Well, I think that's a very respectful attitude. When did you come? When did you come to New Orleans?
I came to Louisiana in 2011, and I moved to New Orleans finally in 2016.
So you got here right on time for something else.
For Ida, yes, I was here for Ida.
Yeah, I mean, just now, Tortoise by Paul Manship makes you think of the craft of poetry. I love that so many sculptures are about animals. I love looking at them as a group, you know, when I went through this book about pictures of the sculptures.
When I was whole, I put little references in my poems to my favorite fetish porns. When I was armored, when I could mock my own vulnerability. Then I was ambivalent about shock value. Now, nothing is shocking. They say it is easy to sculpt. They say to bleed on the bronze, to weep on the copper until it transmutes. They say poetry is even easier. Very few tools, no particular rhymes required. They forget the salt content of ink. They forget the way it mixes with mortal blood. And that poem, if you've got a second, you know, that that poem was very much about grieving my daughter, which is funny because it has those immediate references to sexuality in it. And, you know, people, it's an odd way to approach it. But it really is about needing to write out my own grief and needing to experience my grief as I'm actively writing. So, and I guess it's one of the most meta poems of the book, and that it's really a quick distillation of what the rest of the book is about.
Sure, it is. It's also about endurance in a really basic way. The way I think of tortoises, of course, grief,
absolutely.
Of course. It all works together in this kind of beautiful way. And the sculpture is, I don't know, you look at a sculpture of an animal that lives to be so old. Mm-hmm. Stay so long through so much. You know, there's a lot to unpack there. You're right.
There is.
So, Now, what about The Spider by Louise Bourgeois? I love those partly because they're so recognizably hers.
They are.
You know, I can imagine her in a fairy tale forest surrounded by these spiders.
There's a wonderful museum in Fayetteville, Arkansas called Crystal Bridges. And there's a wonderful spider there as you enter the museum. I think that's my favorite one. But yeah, the one in the sculpture garden is fantastic. And it was a lot of fun to write about it.
I'm obsessed with her. I even have a book about her apartment.
Oh, really?
She is a fascinating artist to me in terms of great style, a model for aging, a distinctive, you know, visual voice that she achieved in her lifetime. So I was especially drawn to this.
Well, now that I remember it, I did, even though I was familiar with her, I was familiar with the spiders and I knew what I was looking at. I did sit in the garden and went ahead and spent a good 15 minutes reading about her before I started on this sculpture. Maybe I just felt intimidated. It's a big spider and a famous piece. Is there room for anxiety here? Is there room to float, to hang, to twist one's head around, like a nightmare of black vomit and no breaks? We are getting better. Yes, we are growing and strengthening and chasing our higher selves. Is it too late for failure? For I feel failure coming on, raising itself above me, defeat in a moment of celebration, and I don't see a space for that anymore. I don't see much of anything when you cut down past the poison dreams.
That seems appropriate for spiders, yes.
I'm glad you like it.
And then there are monkeys.
Monkeys. This is my favorite sculpture.
By Rona Pondick. It is? Oh my gosh.
Very much so.
Why?
Well, you know, I see the monkeys, some of which have human hands, some of which have human faces. I see creatures trying to evolve. And every time they try to evolve, another monkey sticks their rump in its face. They're climbing over each other. It's a messy sculpture. And
it seems like it's moving because it's another one of those bright stainless steel sculptures that's so silvery.
It does. Yeah, you can really feel it move when you watch it or when you sit with it. And yeah, I agree. This, then, is the nature of evolution. You knew it was messy. You thought it had a point, that one state of fitness was preferable to another. But this is how the primates end, taking all the mammals with us. The Neanderthals are gone, the chimps too, though the monkeys remain, desperately trying to change, all tails and asses and unclenched fists. If the rainforests live, we'll wish them the best, though we know they will regret success.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with poet Jonathan Penton, whose new book is A Limited Number of Miracles, A Walk Through the New Orleans Sculpture Garden. Let's end on Future Generations by William Zorach.
Okay.
It's a gorgeous mother and child sculpture.
It is. What business is it of yours if he's my brother or my son? He is mine, and I have killed to protect him, just as I'd kill you for looking at me wrong. He is safe here, not safe from trauma, no, nor terror, nor safe from enraged slaps, just as he would not be safe from those things with you. He is warm here. He knows where he is wanted. No one asked what you have to offer.
Now, how has this changed your experience of the place when you go to visit the garden?
It's deepened it. I wondered if I would get stuck in my own interpretations of the pieces when I looked at the sculptures, and that hasn't happened at all. If anything, my interpretations of the pieces have grown less stable in a good way, meaning that I'm not stuck in my patterns of seeing. I see things that I did not see when I was working on the sculptures. It's a greater pleasure now than it was a few years ago, and it was pretty wonderful a few years ago.
That's kind of a gift, you know, to have your idea be the key to your next idea.
Sure, yeah.
Now, what about the new sculptures? Have you been writing about them on the sly, thinking, They may not have made it into this book, but
I haven't. I'm very project oriented. You know, if I don't know exactly what I'm doing, I tend to slack off. But yeah, I definitely walk through that area. I walk through it and enjoy it a great deal. And I have, you know, things I think about the various sculptures. But no, I haven't sat down with any of them.
Did people come up and talk to you? Did you write in the garden, physically write?
I did write in the garden with a physical notebook. Mm-hmm. And people did sometimes come up and talk to me. A lot of times people would watch me without talking to me. Every once in a while someone would ask me what I was doing in a friendly way. There's a sculpture that is, I forget exactly what it's called, but it's very recognizable. It's three seated figures on two benches.
Oh, the George Segal.
Yes. And yeah. I'd sit there and write about the sculptures around me. And every time I was sitting there, people would say, oh, look, it's another sculpture, which was just hilarious.
I used to love seeing that sculpture on the street at the end of St. Charles Avenue, you know, because you'd see such human reaction there, because the streetcar stop and the bus stop were across the way, and there would be this wonderful sculpture. And that was Sidney and Walda Besthoff's great gift to us, to have all this wonderful art that everyone can see for free.
Yeah, it is a wonderful thing. You know, to me, to have a free sculpture garden like that is such a gift to everyone. It's so equalizing. It's so egalitarian, knowing that anyone can go through and experience that much beauty and that much excitement, the same level of excitement that I get out of it. I wish more people would take advantage of it. I know a lot of people do. I just think it's one of our city's gems. I really do.
And to see it so well tended, which is a
fabulous.
Lovely thing, the care that people take with it and thinking through its future.
Yes.
You know, that's always been a great gift. So thank you. Such a beautiful book.
Thank you so much.
And so much to think about for so long. I mean, 66 works of art. We've been talking with Jonathan Penton, whose new poetry collection is A Limited Number of Miracles, A Walk Through the New Orleans Sculpture Garden. You can meet him Sunday, December 7th, after the Saints game at the Maple Leaf Bar.
That's
when he
right.
reads with Roger Kamenetz.
We will be.
John, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Friends of the New Orleans Public Library's Big Book Sale takes place Friday, December 5th from 10 to 4, and Saturday, December 6th from 10 to 3 at Algiers Regional Library, 3014 Holiday Drive. Jonathan Penton reads from A Limited Number of Miracles, A Walk Through the New Orleans Sculpture Garden, and Roger Kamenetz reads from Seeing into the Life of Things, Imagination and the Sacred Encounter, Sunday, December 7th, after the Saints game at the Maple Leaf Bar. Josephine Sacabo signs Tagged, and appears in conversation with Bradley Sumrall of the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, Monday, December 8th at 6 at Octavia Books. Philip Gould, a cultural documentary and architecture photographer, will discuss and sign his new book, Louisiana from the Sky, Monday, December 8th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Gary Tyler, Norris Henderson, and Calvin Duncan appear in a panel discussion, moderated by Andrea Armstrong, to discuss Gary Tyler's book, Stitching Freedom, A True Story of Hope, Injustice, and Defiance at Angola Prison, Tuesday, December 9th at 6 at George's Auditorium, Dillard University. This is sponsored by Baldwin & Company and is a ticketed event. Photographer Loli Cantor signs Call Me Lola, In Search of Mother, Tuesday, December 9th from 7 to 9 at the Uptown Jewish Community Center, sponsored by Octavia Books. Bar Redux presents Nola's New Books Roundup, emceed by M.A. Nicholson and featuring work by Sky Jackson, Justin LaCour, Jonathan Penton, Brad Richard, Christopher Romagera, and Michael Allen Zell, Wednesday, December 10th at 8, Doors open at 7:30. L.L. Gertler signs Ancient Gods on campus and appears in conversation with Elisa Speranza, Thursday, December 11th at 6 at Octavia Books. Fred Mulhern signs My Life in Louisiana, Cartoons and Commentary, Thursday, December 11th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Amanda Seals discusses and signs What Would the Ancestors Say? A one-woman show, Thursday, December 11th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. Dr. David Wild signs Tell Me I Belong, A Journey Across Faith and Generations, Thursday, December 11th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop, and again Friday, December 12th from 12:30 to 2 at the Uptown Jewish Community Center, sponsored by Octavia Books. And finally, maybe you were among the crowd at the Orpheum Theater for Anne Rice on All Saints Day celebration November 1st. But if not, you can now stream the video of musical performances, remembrances, and documentary films produced by Anne's son Christopher and his friend Eric Shaw Quinn. It's available at annerice.com.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.